sometimes I would have psychiatric episodes. And it led me further down the path until I had surgery at 15 years old. I hadn't even had like a driver's course yet. Like, I was too young to drive a car, and yet I was allowed to undergo this permanent removal of a completely healthy part of my body. That was incredibly damaging. And ultimately that was the catalyst to me realizing that this was the wrong choice.
What an amazing guest we had today, Chloe Cole, who transitioned at a very, very early age and then detransitioned. And as a result, she got ostracized, I don't know, all kinds of hell you've been through, where they tried to cancel you, made you feel bad. And today you're here to share your journey with us about your own cancellation. Thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you having
me. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I don't know if you know about this. My wife and I run a school. And it goes from Center Academy. It's in Miami. And we also have two little kids. And this concept of devices using the cell phones is something that we really try to lock down, but not a lot of families do. And I, from watching interviews that you've done, I think maybe the beginning of your journey, if you will, started with unfettered access to your cell phone or a computer. Is that sort of what happened?
Yes, that was definitely a big part of it. I wouldn't have known about these destructive ideologies such as transgenderism were it not for my early access to the internet.
You know, Layla, we talk on the show a lot about how your online reputation can be used against you, but what if you could take back control?
Guess what?
What?
Erase.com does exactly that.
Are you kidding me?
They're an online reputation management company that is fantastic. They allow you or you to take back the power and not let the digital world decide what is said about you.
You know, you bring up a good point. Don't let your online past define your future. These folks, they should call the experts at Erase.com because they can help.
Like they helped us?
They sure did.
And because you listen to Erase, if you just type in the promo code ERASED10, you will receive 10% off these amazing services that help you take back your power.
That's a great deal. Reference promo code ERASED10, you can get a 10% discount off their services.
I like it.
Do it now.
Do it now.
And without it being so unrestricted, and I absolutely agree with you that a lot of families, I think that there is a way to introduce technology to children in a very gradual and safe way, but not in the way that a lot of parents are just like giving their children phones when they're still in elementary school and letting them access whatever they want without any monitoring or any filtering.
I can't even imagine what it's like to be a little kid to see some of the stuff that's on an unlocked phone. I mean, back in the day, I'm old enough, if I wanted to see stuff like that, I'd have to really go out of my way to go to a magazine shop, and it'd be covered in plastic wrap, and just like, now a phone is unlocked, you can just go straight to some of those horrifying visual imagery, right? That just can't be good for a little brain.
I mean, the internet really is a massive information highway with all of what humanity has to offer. A lot of it is good. A lot of it is good information. But also a lot of it is unhelpful at best, or just for children, developmentally harmful at the absolute worst. And a lot of the traffic on the internet is from websites that have pornography on them. And obviously for children, that is incredibly inappropriate, but it's also one of the easiest things that you could access on the internet. And I think the average age of exposure now is roughly between the ages of 10 to 12 years old, which is, it's just unbelievable. But I mean, it sounds like for me, I was exposed pretty young. I started learning about these things when I was still in my elementary school years, and my first actual exposure to pornography and seeing hardcore pornography on a screen was not on a cell phone, but actually on a school device that was completely unmonitored.
That's crazy. Did they fix that vulnerability since then?
They did end up starting to use filters on these school devices, but that was only about like 5 to 6 years into them rolling them out in my school district. And a lot of school districts are still not doing that on the devices that they're giving to these kids.
I know we've had our own issues with our own school with a couple of opportunities where kids were able to go to whatever they wanted on the devices, and it was just like really bad. A lot of parents were like, there was an outcry of the parents. What is the right amount? What is the right access that you give a little kid? I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
I think that it's ideally it's something that you should wait until they're in the later stage of their development, like maybe like early, mid, or even late adolescence, to start introducing them to the internet. And of course, like, you should be monitoring everything, both while you're with them and from afar. You should have like a proctor service on their phone or whatever device they have, and also personally teach them about how they should be using the internet as a tool for networking with people, a tool for staying in contact with friends and family, and learning, but also the dangers that can be present on it. The bad actors can be on there who might want to prey on you, or the fact that there are things that are like not developmentally appropriate to access at one's age, right, and the dangers of that.
Yeah. So take us back to the beginning of your journey of transitioning, because a lot of people maybe don't know who you are. And I mean, just share with us how that all started.
So all of these issues of the internet and of children being exposed to inappropriate things are an integral part of my own personal testimony. I'm somebody who went through the process of a childhood medical and social gender transition from a female identity into a male lifestyle. And I came back from that all before I was even 18 years old. I was 12 when I started to call myself a boy. I was 13 when I was expedited onto the medical process with Lupron as a puberty blocker, weekly injections of testosterone, and a surgery to remove my breasts before I detransitioned at 16. And in my earlier years, as a little girl, before I had believed that I was a boy, I mean, when I was really young, I was actually quite a feminine girl. I loved pink, I loved wearing bright colors. My dad often tells me, you know, when you were really little, you wouldn't even want to leave the house if you weren't wearing like a bright color or a cute dress. And I loved playing dress up with my sisters. I loved when they put makeup on me and playing with dolls. But as I got older, I found that I just tended to align a little bit more with the boys around me eventually, especially like my older brothers, my male friends at school. I started to take upon more stereotypically masculine interests, things like video games, exploring, being outside, and other parts of my personality started to shift with that. I started to cut my hair shorter. I started to wear more comfortable, more boyish clothing. And I remember at the time that I started to hit puberty, I tried makeup, I tried purses and the things that the other girls around me were doing, and it didn't feel right for me. But it wasn't something that I was particularly uncomfortable with either. I considered myself to be a tomboy, and I love that about myself because it felt like something that made me unique, that made me strong, that set me apart from the other kids my age. But eventually, as I started to go through the course of puberty and as all these changes in my life started to happen, not only socially, but also with my own body, with my breasts starting to develop, with the shape of my body starting to change, and realizing that there are certain expectations placed on me as a woman, some of which are harder to keep up with than others, and that people were now looking at me in a different light. Now that I was developing into a young woman, especially at such a young age, I was about 9 years old when I started going through puberty. So it was a little harder for me. I was one of the first few girls in my class to start developing physically. And it was very deeply uncomfortable in a lot of ways. And it brought me attention that I didn't really want or need at that time, including from adults who would make sometimes gross comments about my body. Sometimes it was teachers, sometimes it was people on the internet. And I also had felt for a very long time, for pretty much as long as I could remember, this This feeling of being different somehow, of something separating me from my peers. It later turned out that I actually had a learning disability, and that affected the way that I thought and behaved and experienced the world. And sometimes because of those differences, oftentimes actually, from a very early age, other kids would pick on me and they would bully me. And I felt like I had to harden myself against the world, and I had a hard time connecting with pretty much anybody, especially the adults around me. I didn't know if there was anybody who I could confide in. So a lot of these deep feelings that I had, I would keep them down. And the only place that I really had to express them was either art or through the internet. And eventually I started to turn to technology to fulfill these unmet social needs that I had as a kid, the unmet love that I didn't really have from a lot of the people around me other than my mom and dad. And eventually the internet started to consume more of my life than my everyday waking life did.
It was Instagram?
I primarily used Instagram and social media, but even before that, when I started getting my school device, I was in fifth grade, and we were allowed to take these home. So I would browse the internet when I was at home and play video games and meet people online. And eventually I got my first phone about a year or so after that. And it was like, the internet was closer than ever now. It was something that I didn't have to have it. I didn't have to be on a computer and sit down somewhere and connect it to the internet, because now the internet was everywhere that I could go at the click of a button in my pocket. And so it consumed my life and more and more and more until I was like pretty much, I didn't really have any friends at school because I felt like I wasn't really like any of the other kids, and I felt more like the kids who I met online. And it just kept drawing me in until, like, I when I started using Instagram, the like social media algorithms will tend to cater themselves to the interests of the user. And so I started seeing a lot of stuff that was tailored to my own interest of things like art, video games, the other media that I would consume, and the fans around them. And I found it just so interesting how in these communities, like these other kids, they were very much like me. Many of them were artistic. Many of them were really smart kids who were different in some way. And they seemed to find a sense of comfort in their friendships on the internet. But a lot of these kids also had another unique quality. Many of them identified as members of the LGBT community. Some of them called themselves gay or lesbian. Many of them called themselves bisexual. But most of these kids who applied this label to themselves were people who called themselves transgender. And that was a word that I had heard on the TV a few times. Sometimes I would hear the adults in my family talking about the news to each other about it. But I never really had any personal interest in it until I started seeing these other children engaging it and living out this lifestyle. And it was very novel. Like, it was something that was very intellectually stimulating for me, because there was not only the personal experiences of these people to read off of, but also I discovered like a lot of like medical literature around it, which I found very, very interesting at the time. And I started to read more and more up on it until it started to feel like personally, there was a reason why I felt so attached to this idea of people identifying as the opposite sex. And so I started to reflect on myself, and I thought, well, you know, the older I get, the less I feel feminine and the less I feel like a girly woman. And it feels like this is something, like, I don't really feel comfortable with the idea of growing up into a woman and having to deal with the sexual tension that I get just for being developed and for And I thought, like, I would never be feminine. I thought that I would never grow into a feminine woman, that I never would be enough because of that. And there are times when I would look at myself in the mirror and think, I'm just, like, I'm too, there's no way that I'm going to be happy that way. I wish that I was born a boy like my older brothers. I would have been so much happier.
You know, it just messes you up.
Eventually those thoughts turned into, maybe I would be, maybe I am a young man. Maybe that's why I'm not comfortable with myself.
Sometimes, as a thought experiment, I think, what kind of woman would I be? And I would be a terrible woman because I am so not into the clothes and the hair and the makeup and, you know, looking pretty and all that. So I can maybe relate to a certain extent, you know? It's just a feeling inside of us that, and so this was resonating with you going on. You sort of found a community that resonated with you.
Right. Absolutely. It's like, it was almost uncanny how in almost every way these kids were just so relatable to me. I think it was the first time that I really had ever felt understood in my life. And it seemed like, for the most part, I wasn't directly interacting with these people, but I kind of lived through them vicariously as they moved through the process of transitioning, as they started to question, and then eventually they decided that they wanted to become a member of the opposite sex, start dressing like the opposite sex, and eventually some of them went on to go on the medical interventions very young. And the social acceptance that they would get, the praise, the seemingly being loved for who they thought they were, it started to hit me that these all were things that I really yearned for. And I thought, not only would I get a sense of personal gratification and a sense of peace with myself, through doing this, I also would develop and make connections with a community of people who were just like me.
Can you give an idea and how so big this community old, was or is?
I mean, I think in the United States alone, a few million people identify as transgender, and I think that's just adults. I don't think that accounts even for children who identify as transgender, which I think children and people in their early 20s are currently the largest cohort of the transgender community. But
I mean, like an Instagram.
At the time, it seemed like a very seemed like a very niche community.
Yeah, these groups on Instagram. How big are these groups that you were tapping into?
Some of them were larger than others. Some of them were probably like a few tens of thousands of kids. Some of them were more like just like a few dozen or a few hundred.
Right.
And I personally like tend to lean more towards those smaller groups of people because they were easier to interact with. And I didn't care much for influencers or celebrities at the time. I wasn't being influenced by transgender celebrities. It was these groups of normal kids who were just everyday people who I could relate to.
So at what point did you become like a poster child? Did you become like, did they put you out there as a somebody to really follow and watch? Do you become an influencer of sorts along the way?
Not exactly. I mean, I had a very a pretty small presence on social media at the time. I think before I started doing what I'm doing today, I only, like, my largest follower count was maybe like 1,000 or 2,000. And I would say that maybe that was a little bit more so the case in real life, actually, as I started to progress through the process of socially transitioning. I hate to say it like this, but almost a trailblazer amongst my friends. For many of them, like, I was the only transgender person who they had known at the time. We were living in a small town, and it was something that people just didn't really talk about. So it was kind of a shock, actually, when I started to my friends and the people around me, when I started to go through this process and I started to change pretty much in, like, visibly in every way. I told my mom, well, first I had told a few friends from school and then eventually one of my older sisters, until I had told my mom and dad about these feelings about a month before my 13th birthday. And while they wanted to Well, the reaction between my friends and family was very different. My friends at school, actually, they had their wits about them, and they were like, no, this is, we don't believe that you're a boy, and we're not going to act like you're a boy. And they were actually the first few people to push back against this, but it wasn't in a way that exactly showed concern for me personally. It was more so like, we're going to pick on you because you're acting differently, which I think, unfortunately, when you're in middle school, that's kind of the expected attitude when you do anything different. And I don't exactly blame them for acting as a bunch of 11, 12, 13-year-olds do. But my mom and dad, and they were really not sure exactly what they should do. It was something that they'd heard about the news. They heard celebrities doing it before, but this is not something they ever thought they would hear from their own child. And while they wanted to help me feel comfortable with myself, they wanted to help me figure out what was going on exactly, they never once believed that I actually was a young man. And so they pushed back on it a little bit even. They challenged me, especially when I started talking about the medical process of things. They told me, like, no, we don't want to be responsible for this. We don't want you to be going down a path of permanent change, a permanent physical changes when you're still very much a kid. And I think my mom and dad had the right idea in mind. And when it came to the world outside of our family, like I didn't tell my school. I didn't really tell anybody at school other than like my close circle of friends about my feelings or about what I was going through. Not even my teachers. So they had no idea that I was actually transitioning until in the middle of eighth grade, I started to actually start taking the hormones and going on the procedures. And it was very confusing for them.
So this was in California, right?
Yes.
Is that part of the story as well, that maybe in California the rules and regulations are a little bit different and parents don't need to be involved with the kids' transition? And like, is that sort of part of the story?
Yeah, California is, unfortunately, as much as I love my state, they've done one of the worst jobs handling this issue. Over half the United States has put some measure in place to prevent kids from being able to access these treatments and be medically abused. But unfortunately, we're going in the opposite direction. We're facilitating this. We're allowing children to run away from their families, even from other states, even ignoring the custody laws of other states, to become a sanctuary state of sorts, where pretty much any child in the U.S. can come to us and go down this dangerous medical and lifestyle route.
Wow. So there
are several laws in place that I think played a really dangerous role in my own story. They completely, by California law, insurance companies, private and public, have to completely cover every single one of these treatments. So it incentivizes patients to go through it, because not only is it touted as a life-saving cure for gender-confused children, it's also pretty much completely free. It seems like a no-brainer for these kids. And transgenderism is included in our anti-conversion therapy law. So anything other than therapists or medical professionals mindlessly affirming these patients and their feelings, anything other than telling them, yes, you are transgender, yes, you are the opposite sex, and we are going to facilitate a medical transition for you, can be considered conversion therapy. And a therapist or a medical professional can lose their license if they try to do the right thing and question it.
And then you had therapy, and your parents were not involved, were not allowed to be involved in that as well?
No. So that's also another part of that. In California, minors, I think, starting at the age of 12, are considered to be emancipated when it comes to mental health care. So their mental health records are, I don't think they're accessible by the parent without like explicit consent given by the child. And they're also not required to be even in the room during these appointments, unless, again, the child gives their consent. But that means that in situations like mine, parents aren't really empowered to actually help their children if they are in psychiatric distress. And that was certainly the case for my mom and dad. They had no idea what was going on during these appointments. They started sending me to therapy after I told them, after I came out to them as transgender, because they wanted to figure out what exactly was mentally going on for me, where these feelings were coming from, whether they came from a deeper place, potentially of trauma, or some other issue. But in order for a child to truly be helped, their parents have to be in the picture. But they were not followed up with about what was being discussed during these appointments. They weren't told about what I was going to be, what the process would even look like for me. So they started to understandably get very frustrated. They decided that they were going to speak to the psychologists themselves and start pushing back on them a little bit, start asking, like, what's going on with her? Why does she feel this way? Why does she feel the need to go down this medical pipeline?
Now.
Why can't we wait until she's an adult?
Exactly.
And what are the odds that she's going to regret this? Which are all very sensible questions, all questions that any parent who is going through this with their child should be asking medical professionals. But the doctors were not doing their job. They were very deceptive. They lied to my mom and dad. They lied to me that I was a boy. And they told me that we're going to have your mom and dad go along with this. And what they told my mom and dad was that this was a quality, this is a trait about myself that was innate. I couldn't control it. That me being transgender was not a phase. That children understand their identity, their gender identity from a very young age. And they started to go even deeper, talking about the suicide statistics. There is a commonly misrepresented suicide statistic in the transgender community of about 41%. And I think that's in reference to suicide, either suicide attempts or people experiencing feelings of suicidality and not completed suicides. And these are adult patients that this survey was pulling. And they were using it to convince my mom and dad, hey, this is, if you don't allow your child to go through this, the longer that she goes without this treatment, the more likely it will be that she ends up taking her own life. And they didn't just say this once. They repeated this lie to my mom and dad at every step of the way.
Did you ever
have any thoughts of, not being given any other choice, being led to believe that my life would literally be on the line if they said no, they said yes. Because they wanted me to be okay. They hated the thought of their daughter taking her own life.
Did you ever have any thoughts about
I was
suicidal ideation?
Not at the time.
Okay.
I was a perfectly healthy young woman.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
I was barely 12 going on 13. And I wasn't thinking about taking my own life at all. I was a little depressed at the time. I didn't really have any friends at school, and I was struggling to understand who I was and orient myself in the world around me. But I wanted to have a better life. I didn't want to die until I had started on these treatments.
Normal young person confusion as they grow up and go through adolescence.
Right. And there were some things in my life that went a little bit deeper than that. I mean, I had been sexually assaulted by a classmate. I had some sexual trauma. I had been exposed to things, certain things just far too early in my life. But ultimately, the gist of what I was experiencing was distress that everybody goes through as they grow up. And yet, unlike other children, I wasn't given the chance by my doctors to just experience that.
So fast forward, you changed your mind and you wanted to undo everything. At that point, were you a known figure? Were you a notable figure? At what point did you become known?
I mean, that wasn't until much later after I had detransitioned. But I mean, my life was completely different after I began transitioning. And once I was out of my eighth grade year and I was moving into my freshman year of high school, I looked and sounded like pretty much any other young man my age. And I actually had a deeper voice than a lot of my male classmates, funnily enough. So I passed as a member of the opposite sex, so to speak. And so I went through most of my high school years with people knowing me as a young man named Leo. And because I was at a new school, most people didn't actually know that I was really a girl. And it was a bizarre experience in a lot of ways, but I also, it was very interesting. And sometimes it was kind of fun getting to live in that male role and learn a little bit more about the opposite sex and take upon that role. But it also was very difficult at times. I mean, the grass is always greener on the other side.
It's not easy.
I had wished from a very young age that I was a boy and that I didn't have to deal with some of the trials and tribulations of being a girl growing up into a young woman. But really, especially in the world that we live in today, we live in a culture that really devalues young men and ignores the struggles that they experience. And I got to see my own male friends going through their own struggles and largely being ignored because they were men and they just didn't really matter to the world around them and they didn't really have a place where they could, an outlet where they could get those feelings out. And I experienced that myself as well. And psychologically, the testosterone was not only changing me physically in my appearance, in my voice, and in my body, but also affecting the way that I behaved and thought. And it made it a lot harder for me to process my emotions. I was prone to bouts of anger, long spirals of depression, and sometimes I would have psychiatric episodes. And even though it was so clear that it was the treatment and the lifestyle that I was living that was leading me down the spiral, and yet none of my doctors really questioned along the way whether they were doing the right thing or not. And it led me further down the path until I had surgery at 15 years old. I hadn't even had like a driver's course yet. Like, I was too young to drive a car, and yet I was allowed to undergo this permanent removal of a completely healthy part of my body. That was incredibly damaging. And ultimately that was the catalyst to me realizing that this was the wrong choice. That this was something that was destroying me in every single way, psychologically, physically, with my health. And when I was 16, I had this epiphany that I had aspirations to become a mother, that I wanted to become a wife, that I wanted to actually live in a very feminine role, but I worried that I never would be enough. And my identity issues didn't come from my body, didn't come from the way that I was born. It wasn't some sort of genetic anomaly or alternative brain pattern that I had that was making me this way. It was just me struggling socially. And that was okay, that I didn't have to change these parts of myself in order to become happy with myself. And by trying to do so, I was losing parts of myself as an adult woman, first my breast and potentially my fertility down the line. And I knew then I couldn't keep doing this. I had to give it up, and I had to find a new life after transition.
So I know your parents are involved in your journey, and I'm sure people ask you all the time, where were your parents in all this? Where were your parents in all this? So you, like, who's taking you to these appointments? Who took you to the surgery, you know, the morning of, like, Did they go along with it? Because if they didn't, it'd be even worse. Like, what was that all about?
Well, it was my mom and dad. Yeah, they were the ones who were taking me to this, and it was a huge dilemma for them. We've had a lot of deep, intimate conversations about this after the fact, and they've told me They never saw me as their son. They never believed that I was transgender. They never believed that I was a boy in any way. But they had my life threatened by the doctors so many times. And to hear that over and over and over again, they were deeply afraid for me. And I mean, raising me already was a struggle because I had some birth defects, I had some health issues, I had a learning disability, so I was a little bit different and a lot more difficult. And to have just another thing thrown at them again with all this by our doctors, they were scrambling to find an answer, and they were trying to do what was right for me, but they also knew deep down in their hearts, like, I think that all of us were being led astray. And so when it came time for me to detransition, when I came to them talking about my regret in tears, there was a lot of guilt that they were experiencing. And they felt like for years they blamed themselves for this. And I think to an extent, every parent has a bit of culpability when their child experiences deep psychiatric issues like gender dysphoria. But it's not their fault, and it certainly wasn't the fault of my mom and dad. And they, throughout the process, our relationship was kind of a big struggle. We got closer for a little bit in the early stages of my transition, as I seemed to get better, at least superficially. And then as reality started to hit me down, like further down the line, as my physical and mental health started to tank, I started to shut myself off from everybody in my life, including my own mom and dad. We'd always get into fights. There was this growing rift between us until I came to them saying, like, I can't keep doing this anymore. And as difficult as that initially was, as we were scrambling to figure out, like, what do we do? Like, we've lost, like, she's basically lost, like, her entire adolescence to this. They also started to see a bit of resilience in me as I was fighting for my life to find a new normal, as I started to reorient myself again, as I started to become more feminine, as the light started to return to my eyes. They were so grateful that I was able to come back from this, and especially that I was able to use my story, our story really, as a family, to help other families in need. And I don't think they give themselves enough credit for that, because if I didn't have my family, if I didn't have my mom and dad during this time, during that very difficult period of my life, I don't know where I would be today.
Mm-hmm. So was it some sort of a psychedelic journey or something that opened your eyes, if I recall correctly?
I mean, there were a lot of things that eventually led to me realizing that my transition was a mistake. I did, during the post-surgery period, experiment a little bit with substances, because I was self-medicating. Like, I was struggling so much to deal with the weight that was on my shoulders from being on the drugs, from having just lost my breasts. And unfortunately, I was surrounded by a lot of bad influences, and I turned to the use of psychedelic, psychoactive substances. And obviously,
recreationally.
For 15, yes. Yes, recreationally.
Not
and
yeah.
Not, well, I mean, a 15-year-old getting their hands on street drugs is not therapeutic at all. But it was obviously a very dangerous thing for me to do, but I think that there was, and I'm not trying to encourage the use of these substances at all, but there was some value in that. I think it did open up my mind a little bit to realizing that, I mean, at one point it hit me that I was living a lie, that I was being dishonest with myself, that I was living a life that was focused on, like, pleasure and gratification rather than being, and that was destroying me. It was destroying the lives of the people around me. But it didn't really, that I couldn't really come to a conclusion from that until it was going to take a little bit of time for me to process what that really meant. And the final nail in the coffin to my transition was me taking a class in psychology, actually, and learning mostly about children's formative years and how children from infancy up until 18 years old develop, and how things like parenting styles and attachment play a role in that. And it was when I realized that my identity, my struggles with my identity, didn't come from my gender, but instead from a broken attachment style, that I chose to stop transitioning.
Amazing. Wow. So, let's talk about cancellation. So along the way, even during the transition and detransitioning, you gained and lost people along the way. Did you ever lose anybody super important in your life? How hurtful was it? Maybe you could share a story of a heartbreak along the way, whether it's before or after.
I went through a lot of personal loss during especially the first year of my detransition. I lost the support of my doctors when I came back to them, when I came back to the same people who had put me on this course of treatment in the first place. They no longer had an answer for me. And part of that is the fact that there's no acknowledgement of detransition or the people who experience it in the medical community at all. There's no standards of care written for those of us who choose to stop. So there's no framework for doctors to really work off of with patients like me. But also they had this attitude of, you're not our problem anymore. We don't know what to do with you, and we don't want to face our mistake, so we're not going to help you, even with basic things. I was asking for a regular blood test. I was asking for a chart of where my sex hormone level should be at for a woman. I was asking for them to do simple changes, like just changing my sex marker and my name back to my birth name in my records. I still get letters from Kaiser addressing me as a young man, addressing me by the name Leo, even though I had begged multiple doctors, I had begged even my personal physician to do this for me. And it was just like a total kick in the stomach. It was like, I haven't seen a doctor in like 4 years because I'm still so afraid that I'm just not going to be heard.
So conversion,
I have medical trauma.
Conversion is covered in California, but not deconversion. They didn't think it all
right.
The way
through. There are no laws, and there's no standards of care in place that even mention the word detransition, even though it's such an obvious likely outcome, especially for the kids who go through it. And in my personal relationships, the moment that I announced that I was detransitioning, the majority of the transgender community and even my longtime transgender friends had turned on me. And they would, at best, they would go silent on me. They would block me. They would stop associating with me quietly. At worst, they would actively go out of their way to blame me for everything that happened. They would say, this is all your fault. You should have known better. It didn't matter that you were a 13-year-old girl. You were just being stupid. And obviously you weren't really transgender. You were taking away treatment from people who really would have deserved it. You didn't deserve to have a loving family. You didn't deserve to have doctors who would support you through this. You're garbage to us.
Vicious.
You're a traitor.
Vicious.
And you should be ashamed of yourself. Incredibly vicious, yes. People would even say, like, I should take my own life. And I still get that today. And it hurt so much because these were people who I once loved. People who I once looked up to, people who once treated me like I was a role model, a hero. They had celebrated me the further that I went in. And yet the moment that I stopped, they let their own personal insecurities, they let their own feelings of fear of regretting their own transition get in the way and start attacking me. And one of those people was my best friend since fifth grade. I end up losing her down the line too. At first, like she feigned support. She would say things like, "Oh, I'm so glad you found yourself." Even then, I could tell like she wasn't feeling too hot about it. I haven't heard from her in 3 or 4 years, and unfortunately, she's somebody who I worry about a lot, and I think about her, and I pray for her every day because even our friends have told me she's going down the route that you did, when we can tell that things are going to end up the same for her or worse if she doesn't turn back now.
She's on the transition journey herself?
Yes, she's been on the drugs too. She started testosterone, and I'm afraid every day that she is going to repeat my same mistakes and go into surgery. I've lost so many people who I care about to this, and many of them willingly chose to cut me off after I decided that I wasn't going to live this way anymore. And even some of that came from friends outside of the transgender community. People at school, I detransitioned just before my senior year of high school, which was just incredibly rough for so many different reasons. Like medically, it was just hell. And I was so sickly, especially without the guidance of my doctors. But I also was struggling. I needed people at a time when I needed people, when I needed my peers, when I needed my friends the most. Most of them had just completely dipped, and they were nowhere to be found. Many of them were treating me the same as the transgender community was. Many of them were telling me, like, this is your fault. Like, you need to own up. This is your responsibility, and you should have known better. And a lot of them also were just like, they let politics get in the way of our relationship. A lot of my friends throughout most of my high school career were fairly left-leaning, some more so than others. And as they saw me start to question some of the dogma, not only around transition, but also a lot of like modern leftism in general, they took it personally. They took deep offense to it. And eventually they decided, we're not going to be friends with you anymore. Like, you can figure your own stuff out, and we're not going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I'm all about tolerance and acceptance, and people have a right to be happy, and everybody's on their own journey, and that we should have just compassion and acceptance for everybody. That's where I stand, and I wish we had more of that. So as a young,
especially from the people who once claimed to be very compassionate and accepting,
exactly,
they're nowhere to be found when people like me come out of the waterworks and talk about our own stories of being harmed by their very ideology. There's just no forgiveness for any of us. And unfortunately, what I experienced socially during the initial few phases of my detransition is pretty much universal amongst pretty much every detransitioner has experiences to some extent within the transgender community, some of them even within their own family systems or with their friends.
So, I mean, did you feel like during your detransition feel lonely, like or did you still have a lot of close relationships? And you were lonely before you even started this entire journey. Is it a different kind of feeling, or is it more the same?
I would almost say that I was back at square one, except it was so much worse. It was like the entire framework of my life up until that point was completely shattered. My identity for 3 years out of my life was just completely thrown out the window. And now this community that once supported me through it and my own friends who I had made at school were just gone. It was the absolute worst period of my life. And it's ironic that my doctors told my mom and dad that not transitioning me was likely to lead to my suicide, because the transition regret brought me closer to death than living normally and healthily ever has. I was very close to taking my own life during this point in time, because I thought that there was nothing left for me. I thought that I wasn't even going to make it to 18 years old. I didn't think that I was ever going to live to adulthood, or that if I did, that it would be enjoyable. And so it was rock bottom for me, really. No 16, 17, 18-year-old should ever have to go through what I did.
You felt super low at some point, I guess after your breasts were removed, sometime thereafter. And you're like, oh my God, what do I do now?
It was a living nightmare. It really was. And I thought, like, I'm, especially with the loss of my breasts, I felt like a monster. I felt like I ripped something away from my own future children that I felt like I was just horrible for taking away that option from my children of being able to nourish them with what God gave me. And also, like, I hadn't even had a first kiss yet by that point in time. And yet I had this very integral part of female sexuality ripped away from me forever. And for years I thought, there's no way that I'm ever going to be lovable. Unfortunately, it turned out not to be true.
Oh, but great. Did you feel, I imagine shame must have been sort of a prevailing emotion. Like, what have I done? Oh my gosh. Self-imposed.
There was a lot of shame around the way that I looked, around the way that I sounded, around the choices that I had made as a consequence of all that. There was a lot of guilt about how this way of life was affecting not just me, but the people around me, and especially like the pain that my mom and dad were going through. Like, it became more and more clear to me as I got older.
Yeah, it wasn't just about you. You were distributing this sort of energy into the universe as well, especially to your parents and your family. So when things got really bad, how did you keep your head on straight? What happened? How did you shift?
I had a lot of good people around me. My mom and dad were there for me. They would give me comfort and reassurance, even in little ways, like the little things that they would do for me, just like making me breakfast and talking to me about it and talking through it. It meant so much to me, and it still means so much to me. But I also, once again, I had turned to the internet because I didn't really have any other place to go with no friends at school. And eventually I had dropped out my senior year because of this, because I had no friends. I was like, my school performance was failing because I was just in so much distress. But this time it was different. I wondered if there was a word for what I was going through. I put two and two together. I thought, well, if I went through a transition and I stopped, it must be a detransition, right? So I Googled the word, and it turned out this is a real word. And there's thousands of results. And wait a minute, there is a community of people on the internet who are just like me. But actually, it's not the superficial, like, it turned out that they didn't really have the superficiality of the transgender community. These were people who were talking about real things, really getting down to the real issues of where these feelings first came from, and also addressing the aftermath of the medical abuse that we'd all been through. All these people who I was speaking to at the time were adult men and women who had been through the process as adults and were further along in the process of stopping their transition. So they gave me kind of a marker for what I could do in order to heal from all this psychologically, spiritually, and physically. But they also gave me hope that there was a future for me. There was something that just, it felt like something was missing though still. This is a group of people who I deeply cared for, but, and the conversation around these matters in the media was really starting to rapidly shift. And yet there wasn't really anybody that was nearly as young as I was in this community or being involved in the conversation. And it became more and more clear to me, I'm in the perfect position to cause a major shift in this. I'm young. At the time I was still 17. I was still a child. And I'd also been through it at a very early age, much earlier than these other people who were publicly speaking out were. And I thought, what better opportunity than to use the pain that me and my family went through to help not only this community of other people, but to help the public understand this issue at large, what is happening in our communities, what's happening to our families and in the institutional corruption that's happening in our healthcare system. I can use this opportunity to create a better world.
Amazing. You called it a mistake earlier, but I don't believe in mistakes. I think everything is, there's a divine purpose for it, reason for
so.
Everything. So maybe that's.
I think that God put me, allowed me to go through this, not because he wanted me to suffer, not because he thought that I deserved it, but because he knew that I could get through it.
He could handle
and
it.
And he knew that I could use it to help others in need.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like your parents had unwavering love and support the entire distance, all of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My mom and dad, they love me to bits. They've always loved me. They have always wanted the best for me. And they're very supportive and very, very proud of me now.
You know, your story is a little bit different from most others that are on the show, because most of the people on the show, they were canceled unfairly with mistruths and stuff like that. And almost all of them are like, you have to fight, fight, fight. Yours is a little bit different. You might have been anointed because you could be a facilitator of change, you know, and God like led you on this journey so that you can actually make change in the world, you know. And so at what point did you become, were you thrust out there, you realized this, and then some opportunity happened for you to publicly speak, or what did that look like?
I chose to speak out, actually. I decided, I mean, I'd been thinking about it from pretty early on in the detransition process, but I knew, like, if I wanna like, go out to the public and speak about this very intimate thing, especially in potentially very contentious, in a very contentious political environment, I have to get myself together first. I have to heal a little bit before I'm ready to do that. And once the time came, it was about, I think, spring of 2022 that I decided to make an account on X, back when it was still called Twitter, back before the bird got freed out of the cage and it became a free speech platform. So I think I'd been temporarily banned a few times before in the pre-Musk Twitter administration, but I decided I'm just going to throw everything out there. I don't really have much to lose. Like I'm just out of high school, and I'm going to tell my story to the world. And it started with just a few posts on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, like almost overnight, thousands of followers just flooding in. J.K. Rowling was one of the first ones. That was like, okay, so I have this like huge children's book author following me. What is going on? And then media started reaching out to me. I started having reporters asking, like, can we talk to you? Can we call you about your story so I can cover it? And eventually I got asked to start speaking on legislation across the country to help protect children. And I had never thought before at all about doing public speaking of any sort, because I was like the shy kid in school. Like I was quiet. I spent a lot of my time when I wasn't with my friends or with people I liked at school, just drawing or like playing video games in my off time. So it was quite the jump to be doing all of that. And my mom and dad, of course, were very uneasy about it, because I was a 17-year-old girl. And I had never really been out in the world, especially without them before. And at first they were like, no, we are not going to send you into that kind of environment. We are not going to have you be that far away from us. And we're not comfortable with that. And it took a bit of convincing, but I'm so grateful that they ended up saying yes, because it ended up being a very transformative journey for me personally. And also, like, it's cause when because of the fact that they said yes to me doing this, there's been a lot of change in our culture in regards to this issue, and so much progress that's been made in just a matter of a few years.
Because
so
of you.
I'm, again, very grateful to them.
You can take some pride
in
that.
Yeah, I mean it's of course, like, it's the voices like mine of men and women who have been personally harmed in some way, either directly by the procedures or the parents or the families that have been ripped apart by this. But also, like, I really owe it to my mom and dad for letting me do this.
So where do you stand now on the level of peace in your heart? Are you fully healed?
I mean, this is, I think the healing journey is going to be years long, maybe decades long, or even lifelong. And there are days I have where it's harder than others. There are days I have when the progress regresses, when I have to cry, when I have to be upset in order to process everything. But I'm so much further along then. I'm so much further along now than I was then, especially in those days when I was running away from reality and when I was living a lie, because that's exactly what transgenderism comes down to. It is one big lie. There is no way that people can change their sex. It doesn't matter what drugs, it doesn't matter what surgeries, it doesn't matter what body parts you take on or you take off of or put on a person. You are never going to change something that is determined at conception by God. And in trying to do so, you're going to cause great destruction in your own life and the lives of people around you. It's best to orient yourself in reality and to deal with the heart of these issues, where they really stem from. Because these people, where their suffering is coming from is not some genetic anomaly. It's not their brains or some part of them somehow being of the opposite sex. These are people who are struggling because they have deep-seated trauma. Many of them have broken relationships with their families. Many of them have been hurt at some point in their childhood in many different ways. And many of them are people who have learning disabilities. And they're so naturally growing up and figuring themselves out and their identity is going to be much more difficult. And what these people deserve, what these children, like the little girl who I once was, deserve, is to be told, the way that you were made was not a mistake. Because you were made in God's image and He does not mistakes. You are beautiful the way that you are. You are unique. And we're going to help you through this. That's why I give my testimony. Because I think that transgender people, that people struggling with this part of their identity deserve so much better than what children like me were given. I want to ensure a better world that my children will grow up in one day.
Are people out there now that think that Chloe Cole is dangerous?
there's a few people. There are a few people who think that this 5'3", 120-pound young woman speaking out about reality is a danger and a menace to society. And I mean, we're the moment that it's clear that, I mean, from they saw me as a threat the moment that I detransitioned, and how they react to me and how they still react to me to this day. And where that really comes from, I mean, especially for the transgender people, it comes from a place of insecurity around their own transition and their own transgender status. Stories like mine shed light on the fact that this, again, is a complete scam. This is something that causes long-term damage, and there's no real basis to it. And so it makes them face the uncomfortable question of, well, so why am I doing this? What's the difference between me and somebody who regrets their transition? Is it really just feelings? Obviously, it can't just be that. And this is something that has a lot of money tied to it, especially with the surgeries. And there are a lot of interest groups that have made great use of this ideology. And the left has made this into a human rights issue. And so when there's so many people out there being convinced that the lives of transgender people are at stake, that children are having life-saving care threatened, I mean, what wouldn't they do? They'd think that people like me are a monster if... They would think that people like me are a monster for trying to take this away.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your story, Chloe. It's like a delight to meet you, and I can see why you've been thrust to the center of this topic, because you're extraordinarily bright and articulate, and your story, as it continues to evolve, I'm sure we're going to hear even more from you in the coming years and decades. And I thank you for coming on the show and being so vulnerable and sharing everything you've got. And good luck with your journey as your life unfolds.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you for having me on the show and for giving me the space to talk about this issue in my own personal experience.
You got it. Thank you so much.